It is Friday, February 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump repeats his attacks on the news media. We look at the controversy regarding transgender rights here in the United States, and we explore the films nominated for the Best Foreign Language Academy Award. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump repeated his recent attacks on the news media Friday morning during his speech at the Conservative Political Action Conference. He said no journalist should be allowed to use anonymous sources in their reporting. Later on, Trump laid out his vision for the conservatives.
The core conviction of our movement is that we are a nation that put and will put its own citizens first.
Trump spoke briefly about his immigration policies.
We've taken swift and strong action to secure the southern border of the United States and to begin the construction of a great, great border wall.
Trump also said his administration will work to keep the U.S. safe from terrorism.
We are going to keep radical Islamic terrorist the hell out of our country.
I spoke with VOA White House correspondent Bill Gallo and asked him about Trump's continuing attack on the news media.
Right, yeah. I mean, that statement from last week in which he called the news media the enemy of the people, he doubled down on that. He said they are the enemy of the people. He said they use sources. When they have no sources, they use unnamed sources. They're just out to get them. So it was an interesting way to begin a speech. But other than that, he sort of just went into a typical type of almost campaign speech for Donald Trump, hitting on some of the themes we've seen him give in speeches, you know, for the last couple of years now.
Yeah, and he spoke about building the wall, which he spoke about before, about, you know, on the U.S.-Mexican border.
Right, and not only that, he promised, he promised to continue his tough immigration policies. He says whether it's drugs or murder, we're getting, quote, bad people out. So it was a strong defense of his immigration policies.
He said that it's the years of empty talk are over, and he said he will keep what he called radical Islamic terror out of the United States.
Yeah, and that kind of thing really plays well at CPAC. These are people who want a bigger military. They want stronger immigration controls, things like that. I mean, it's not to say that the conference is completely supportive of everything that Trump does. I mean, it's quite notable that in the past he has not been so welcome there. But it seems they're on board with what he's doing right now.
Yeah, apparently 2 years ago, he was booed when he spoke at CPAC.
Right. I mean, and he sort of mentioned some of his past appearances at CPAC. He said, I didn't attend last year. He actually backed out last year because he thought he was too controversial. In reality, he backed out at the last minute last year after it emerged that conservative anti-Trump activists were organizing a walkout. There was no walkout this year. He seemed to have quite a lot of support.
As you said, he's had a kind of a mixed history with this organization. What has the response been like to him, you know, at this most recent speech?
Sure. Well, VOA did talk to several CPAC attendees, and it was sort of a mixed bag again. I mean, obviously, it's a conservative political action conference, but there's a lot of libertarians who attend this conference in particular, and they are not on board with certain Trump policies, especially related to stronger government, maybe increased spending on infrastructure, things like that. More government spending is not necessarily something that CPAC attendees are all about. And Donald Trump has a lot of proposals that would cost a lot of money. So I would say it's sort of a cautious embrace of Donald Trump at this point.
And he did, though, get quite a bit of applause when he says he wants to, as he put it, restore the military.
Right. And he promised the biggest military buildup in history. In fact, his quote was offensive, defensive, everything, bigger and better and stronger than ever before.
That's VOA White House correspondent Bill Gallo. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, I understand you have a bit more on this CPAC conference.
Yeah, CPAC 2017 was actually trending worldwide on Twitter as President Trump was speaking. And now we're seeing a lot of reaction to his speech, a lot of kind of the greatest hits, some of the applause lines. Of course, he's playing to a very friendly audience there just outside of Washington, D.C. So we're seeing a lot of these kind of what they call red meat that he's throwing to the base, these lines to get everybody fired up. So particularly about things like the military, about security, immigration, those kind of things. We're seeing a lot of activity around that. One thing that I did see just before I came in here was there was a bit of a protest in an unusual way. Someone was handing out Russian flags that had Trump on them, huh. And people were waving them. Apparently, a protester that had made these flags and was handing them out. One reporter tweeted that he was escorted out and screamed that Donald Trump was fascist. So there, even though it is a friendly audience for Republicans and for President Trump, there are protesters there that are making their voices heard as well. And then at the same time the CPAC conference is going on, gathering all these Republicans and conservatives, you have other events going on around the country that are on the opposite end of the spectrum. And that is these town halls that a number of members of Congress are holding, meeting with their constituents to talk about some of the more controversial items that have been taken up by the Congress and by President Trump, particularly with the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. And we're seeing a lot of social media activity at those town halls, getting very contentious in some cases, constituents yelling at their members of Congress, telling them to do their job. One video that's gone viral, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton takes a question from a 7-year-old boy who asks him why Donald Trump wants to have money to build a wall and take money away from children's television programming. So that little boy going and making the rounds on social media after that video. But it is an interesting dichotomy on social media. You're seeing all of this Republican togetherness and excitement coming out of National Harbor, Maryland, and at the same time, a lot of anger and disappointment coming from throughout the country with different constituents.
Yeah, a lot of strong feelings out there.
Definitely, and all of it mixing together on social media.
Okay. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. U.S.-backed Iraqi forces push deeper into the western half of Mosul. Two suicide blasts occur near Al-Bab, Syria, and they kill scores of people. A suicide bomber kills at least 8 soldiers at a Yemeni military base, and the killing of an Indian engineer in the United States raises concern of a climate of intolerance. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the U.S. National Institutes of Health, getting enough quality sleep can help protect your mental and physical health, as well as your safety and quality of life. Not getting a good night's sleep on a regular basis can put you at risk for medical conditions such as obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. Penn State researchers have found in 2 studies that there's a cycle of how the caliber and amount of sleep is affected by and can affect daily stressors. Penn State's Orfu Buxton, senior author of the 2 studies, says having a less stressful and conflict-filled day is followed by a night where it's easier to get more sleep. And, in turn, having a good night of sleep is more likely to be followed by a day with less stress and conflict. He suggests that sleep is a powerful source of resilience to help get through difficult times. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we get ready for Sunday night's big Academy Awards. Following the Trump administration's rollback of federal guidelines telling public schools to let transgender students use bathrooms and locker rooms matching their chosen gender identity, there's a lot of confusion and uncertainty about the issue. The Trump administration is arguing that it is an issue that should be left to individual states to decide. International Edition's Lori London spoke with labor and employment attorney Thomas Wassell with Long Island, New York-based firm Cullen and Dykman. She asked him to explain exactly what this new administration order means.
There's a federal law that relates to sexual equality and other gender issues in education. It's known as Title IX of the Education Act. And last year, the Obama administration issued something that's called a Dear Colleague letter. This is often how the federal agencies give advice. And in the Dear Colleague letter, they gave guidance that said that Title IX, which does clearly prohibit sex discrimination, but that it applied to transgender students. Transgender students are not specifically mentioned in Title IX, but they were interpreting it as applying it to transgendered students. What has now happened is the Trump administration has issued new guidance, essentially rescinding or withdrawing this other guidance. So now there is no guidance specifically as to whether Title IX covers transgendered students.
Is it just about which bathrooms they should use?
No, not at all. Title IX covers everything. Title IX is often cited and used in terms of sports teams. It's the law that requires that schools spend comparable amounts of money on women's teams as well as men's teams, things like that. It applies to locker rooms. It applies to all sorts of gender issues at schools. And basically, the rescinding of the guidance basically now is that the federal government, the Justice and Education Department, I don't know that they're taking the position that it doesn't apply to transgendered, but they have withdrawn the guidance that says that it does.
So what policies do school districts around the country have at the moment regarding students that are transgender?
There's a wide variety. In many of the big cities, I would probably have to say in the blue states, there are policies that quite clearly protect transgendered students and provide that they have the right to use the bathroom of the gender with which they identify. You know, New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, and a number of cities have rules like that. But at the same time, there are many school districts that have the opposite approach. In fact, there's a case that's going to the Supreme Court right now involving a student at a high school in Virginia where the school district basically said that this transgendered male can't use the boys' restroom, and that's going to the Supreme Court.
So really it's an issue in our country that sounds like it hasn't been resolved.
Well, yeah, there is a case going to the Supreme Court right now. It's scheduled to be argued. It's and in fact, oral argument in that is scheduled for March 28th. So the thing is, many of the laws that discuss discrimination discuss it in somewhat specific terms, but not necessarily all encompassing. For example, Title VII, which is the federal anti-discrimination statute that applies to employment, says that you can't discriminate on the basis of sex. It doesn't say anything about sexual harassment. However, the courts and later on Congress found that sexual harassment was a type of discrimination on the basis of sex. It's a matter of interpretation. Same thing is true for Title IX. It doesn't specifically in its terms address transgendered students, but it does prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex or gender. So the question is, does that encompass transgendered students? And it'll be up to the courts, it appears, to decide that, since I don't believe there's any realistic possibility that Congress is going to specifically amend Title IX.
What do you expect will likely happen next for transgender student rights?
Well, if in fact the Supreme Court upholds the rights of the student in Virginia and basically says that Title IX does cover transgendered students, that would be a significant victory, and it would end the debate unless Congress wants to pass a law specifically saying that transgendered students are not covered by Title IX. If the Supreme Court interprets it as being covered, that's the end of the inquiry unless the law gets changed. Many people argue that this should be that each state should make the decision here. So in fact, some of the talk out of the Trump administration was that this should be a state issue. That has some sort of surface appeal. Our government is one, we call it a federalist government, so that rights that are not granted to the federal government are reserved to the states. That's in the Constitution. However, states' rights have been invoked over decades in many types of discrimination or equal rights situations. States' rights was invoked for women's rights, for racial issues. I think in today's world, if someone were to argue that the states should be able to decide whether racial discrimination is legal or not, or discrimination specifically sex discrimination on the basis of gender should be decided on a state-by-state basis, I don't know that there'd be a lot of support for that argument. We may find 10 years, 20 years, 50 years down the road that the people who are arguing that transgendered rights should be decided on a state-by-state basis are going to be relegated to the dustbins of history in the same way that the 1960s states' rights advocates are.
That's labor and employment attorney Thomas Wassel. He spoke to International Edition's Lori London. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. Five films are nominated for the Academy Award for Best Foreign Language Film this year. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the subject matter ranges from a tribal love story to a gripping World War II drama to a poignant drama from Iran.
Of the five films nominated for the Best Foreign Language Oscar, none has won either a BAFTA in Britain or a Golden Globe here in the United States. So the Oscar field is wide open. Australia's entry, Tana, tells a Romeo and Juliet-style story set on a South Pacific island. The film's Australian director, Bentley Dean, said he wanted to go back to Tana to make a movie ever since he went there more than 10 years ago to make a documentary.
Had a brief window of opportunity between projects and convinced my wife to come live with me and with my two small children and try and make a film, collaborating with the local community, and reconnected with the tribes over there, and went and visited and say, you know, what do you think? You know, do you want to make a film together? And they said, yeah.
The Danish movie Land of Mine recounts the true story of teenage German prisoners of war who were made to clear mines from the coasts of Denmark after World War II. Martin Sandvliet, who directed the film, said it caused a lot of soul-searching in Denmark.
It brought out a lot of debate. The historians came out of their little holes, so to speak, and it brought out a big debate in the media whether it was right to treat the Germans like this or whether it was facts or whether it was fiction or whether I have gone fictionalized it too much, or whether all these things that is interesting for a movie.
Sweden's A Man Called Ova tells the story of a disagreeable old man who keeps trying to hang himself so he can be reunited with his late wife. But when a young Iranian woman moves into his neighborhood, his perspective changes. The film is based on the novel by Frederick Backman. Actor Rolf Lassgaard, who plays Ova, says the novel informed the choices he made in the film.
Of course, you could feel the pressure, but pressure is something good to have on you. So, I used the book as an actor, because you can find a lot of good stuff that you can use in the shoot.
Germany's Toni Erdmann is a father-daughter comedy that also pokes fun at sexism, greed, and family relationships. The film won the Fipreski Prize, given by critics at the Cannes Film Festival. Director Maren Ade says she has been almost overwhelmed by the movie's success.
It's nice and it's so, I mean, I enjoy that the film is released in so many countries. It's really something that you dream of when you do a film. It's what you do the film for, that it has a own second life with the audience. And it's a crazy time and the year's almost gone now. I don't know, yeah.
Iran's entry is The Salesman from director Asghar Farhadi. It tells the story of a theater couple whose lives are turned upside down when the wife is attacked in their apartment. Farhadi, whose film A Separation won the Best Foreign Language Film Oscar in 2012, will not be attending the Oscars because of the Trump administration's ban on travel from Iran and six other Muslim-majority countries. Though that ban has been temporarily overturned in U.S. courts, the president has announced plans to issue a new order soon. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. Well, a new report says deaths caused by heroin overdoses in the United States quadrupled between 2010 and 2015. The National Center for Health Statistics says there were 12,989 overdose deaths involving heroin in 2015. In 2010, the number was slightly over 3,000. In percentages, heroin caused 8% of drug overdose deaths in 2010, and now it accounts for 25%. The center cites dropping prices and increasing potency for the rise in deaths. Furthermore, experts say they believe the opioid epidemic caused by prescription painkillers may also be driving people to use heroin, as the drug is usually much cheaper. Well, that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On his first trip to Baghdad as defense secretary, Jim Mattis praised the Iraqi army for its resilience and noted the forces are now focused on liberating West Mosul. The battle for the complete liberation of Mosul cannot come soon enough for the hundreds of thousands of Iraqi citizens who, for more than 2 years, have suffered under ISIS's oppression and terror. ISIS's cruel brutality and reach show they are not just a threat in Iraq and Syria, but to the region and the entire world, said Army Lieutenant General Stephen Townsend, commander of Combined Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve. The Iraqi army has the full support of more than 60 members in the coalition fighting the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, Defense Secretary Mattis told reporters in the Iraqi capital. He commended the accomplishment of the Iraqi army, saying the force has taken casualties, but has reconstituted itself both with equipment and personnel. After a months-long battle, East Mosul was cleared of ISIS. Now the coalition-backed Iraqi forces have set their sights on freeing Western Mosul. In a written statement, Army Lieutenant General Townsend noted that the Iraqi forces have proved themselves to be an increasingly capable, formidable, and professional force. Mosul would be a tough fight for any army in the world, and the Iraqi forces have risen to the challenge, Townsend said. They have taken the fight to the enemy and sacrificed their blood for the people of Iraq and the rest of the world. While ISIS indiscriminately targets civilians, the Iraqi security forces continue to do everything in their power to protect the citizens of Mosul, of all sects and religions, said Townsend. They have shown all of Iraq how to be a unified nation. To date, the coalition has conducted more than 10,000 airstrikes against ISIS targets in Iraq and trained and equipped more than 70,000 Iraqi forces to support Iraqi operations. There will be more fights ahead. We'll stick together, Defense Secretary Mattis said. As we look at the future, we're going to continue to stand by the Iraqi army and the Iraqi people who are fighting this enemy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorial.